From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. Recently, Iowa's largest physicians association, the Iowa Medical Society, and the Iowa Board of Pharmacy have come out in favor of easing the state's marijuana laws so researchers can study the drug's usefulness to patients. This hour, we'll talk about current clinical trials with medical marijuana and whether Iowa should join 14 other states that allow marijuana use for medical purposes. My guests will include the co-director of the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research at the University of California in San Diego and the executive director of the Genesis Health Group in the Quad Cities. The case for medical marijuana in Iowa after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Recently, Iowa's largest physicians association, the Iowa Medical Society, and the Iowa Board of Pharmacy have come out in favor of easing the state's marijuana laws so that researchers can study the drug's usefulness to patients. This hour, we want to talk about current clinical trials with medical marijuana and the debate over allowing Iowa to join 14 other states that allow marijuana use for medicinal purposes. Later in the hour, we'll talk with Dr. William Langley. He's executive director of the Genesis Health Group in the Quad Cities, and he's also chair of the Iowa Medical Society Committee, which approved the resolution in favor of easing the state's marijuana laws. We'll also talk to Iowa Senator Joe Bolcom. But first of all, we're joined by Dr. J.H. Atkinson. He's the co-director of the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research at the University of California in San Diego. It's one of the few centers, if not the only center, currently doing clinical trials involving marijuana. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Atkinson. I guess good morning to you.
Well, thank you for the invitation to join you.
Tell us, how unique is your center's research involving marijuana in the country?
As far as we know, we've completed the first really comprehensive series of clinical trials in well over 25 years, addressing the potential therapeutic usefulness of cannabis. So I think California may be unique in being the only state to have really funded scientific research to determine if cannabis does have therapeutic value. Among all the states that have passed medical marijuana initiatives, I believe we're this state is unique in that regard.
When did your clinical trial start?
So the trial started in 2000. So California passed this Compassionate Use Act for medicinal cannabis in 1996. The legislature then established the Medical Marijuana Research Act in 1999 to really determine whether or not there could be rigorous scientific evidence developed for smoked cannabis in selected medical conditions. And then the center for medicinal cannabis research at the University of California was established in 2000, and we've conducted six clinical trials and several preclinical studies over the past 10 years, and are then finishing up our last two clinical trials. Should be complete by 2011.
Okay, in the last 10 years, those six clinical trials that you've finished up, tell us, what have those trials involved? What have you been looking at?
So we focused on conditions identified by the U.S. Institute of Medicine for conditions in which cannabis was thought to have possible therapeutic effects. We focused on painful conditions secondary to nerve injury or disease. That is neuropathic pain, and also there was some evidence that cannabis might provide antispasmodic effects for people afflicted with multiple sclerosis and similar conditions, since that spasticity can be very painful and disabling. So we focus in all of our trials on neuropathic pain, either pain related to HIV disease or cancer or diabetes.
Mm-hmm. And what have you found out so far from the trials? How many of these conditions have been helped by marijuana, cannabis?
So if I could, the completed trials all involved neuropathy pain due to HIV or experimentally induced neuropathy in healthy volunteers. So all of the participants were required to have not achieved adequate pain control despite the use of strong painkillers like opioid analgesics, morphine and related compounds, antidepressants, and anticonvulsants. Mm-hmm. So all of the individuals in these trials and across a total of the three clinical neuropathic pain conditions due to HIV, there were roughly 150 individuals. All were on standard treatment, and it appeared that cannabis provided a relief that was additive, additional relief from what these individuals were receiving from standard treatment, and that the magnitude of benefit was roughly in the range of those treatments, not quite as potent as the usual effects reported for opioids, but on par with the effects reported for anticonvulsants and antidepressants used as analgesics. Mm-hmm. So, in short, maybe 50 to 75% of people achieved at least a 30% reduction in pain intensity compared to about 15 to 20% on placebo.
Mm-hmm. And what do those results tell you? Sounds successful.
Sounds successful. The cannabis has modest but and short-term effects. These trials were all really limited to 1 to 2 weeks duration. So it looks like there's something there. It warrants further research to see if that work can be replicated and alternative delivery systems might be found for.
Okay, talk about the delivery systems in these trials thus far. Has it always been smoked, the cannabis?
Yes, all of our first six trials were smoked cannabis. So an individual would smoke a cannabis cigarette in which the so-called active ingredient, if you will, the tetrahydrocannabinol, was present in a potency ranging from roughly 1 to 8%. And that the placebo were cannabis cigarettes in which the tetrahydrocannabinol had been removed. So it had the aroma and the flavor of cannabis without the presumed therapeutic effects. So the problem with smoking, of course, is that it is unacceptable to some people and intolerable to others. An alternative delivery system that we're now testing is vaporization. That is, cannabis is heated to the point where the cannabinoids are vaporized without being combusted, so you don't get all the toxic pyrroles that you do from smoking. And it appears in our preliminary work that one can achieve the same concentrations of tetrahydrocannabinol in the blood as you would by smoking without the downsides of and so we'll see if there is a therapeutic effect on these painful conditions that we're now testing.
I wonder what springs to mind for me is if these trials can be blind in the sense that the people without the THC in their cannabis, wouldn't they, the people with it, immediately recognize whether they had THC, the drug in the cannabis, or not, and then perhaps react accordingly?
We looked at that quite closely in some studies because that's the obvious concern. And it appears that people aren't all that good at guessing what they're on. So we have people guess what they're assigned to before they start, and then at the end of the trial guess what they were on. So in some of the studies, an individual would smoke cannabis 1 week and then the placebo cigarette the next. In the first week, people weren't any good at guessing. That is, they're no better than chance is what they were on. But by the second week, those who'd been on cannabis the first week guessed better than chance that they were on placebo the second week.
Mm-hmm. Who are your study subjects thus far? People who have prior experience with smoking marijuana?
Most did. 90% did. We didn't require it, but we were testing a population infected with HIV in later stage disease, so many of them had had prior experience with smoking cannabis cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. How much do we understand about why marijuana has these effects?
The neurobiology of its analgesia is being worked out. There are two types of cannabinoid receptors, one principally in the brain and a spinal cord, and the other in the peripheral nerves, CB1 and CB2. Appears that these receptors are in areas that are also associated with opioid analgesia, the brain's natural, if you will, pain signaling system. So it appears that cannabis may interfere or modulate pain signaling, both at the level of the spinal cord and perhaps centrally at the level of the brain.
Mm-hmm. In that sense, is it operating that much differently than painkillers, analgesics, opiates that we take for in pill form?
It operates at completely different receptors, but the systems. Inbuilt, if you will, natural cannabinoid system and the inbuilt natural opioid system receptors do overlap, and there appears to be some crosstalk, but they're distinct for the most part, and that's one thing that led us to think that perhaps cannabis would have additional benefit even in those individuals who were already, say, on opioids.
Dr. J.H. Atkinson, please stay on the line with us from San Diego, co-director of the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research at the University of California. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio. Back in 1 minute. This hour on The Exchange, we're exploring medical uses of marijuana, current clinical trials with marijuana, and whether Iowa should join 14 other states that allow marijuana use for medicinal purposes. Joining us, first of all, Dr. J.H. Atkinson, co-director of the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research at the University of California in San Diego. Join our conversation. Do you think more study is needed in order for marijuana to be approved for medicinal use? What evidence do you want to see? 1-866-780-9100. Share your concerns. 1-866-780-9100, or your hopes. And let's talk a little bit about the studies. These trials, which have been going on in the last 10 years at your center at the University of California in San Diego, Dr. Atkinson, we see quite unique in the United States. What about studies on cannabis for medicinal purposes overseas in other countries? Are we in the forefront or lagging behind in looking at how marijuana can be used in this way?
Well, I think we can say we're among the forefront. There is active research programs and often sponsored by pharmaceutical companies, particularly in the United Kingdom, that are investigating cannabis use in alternate delivery systems, sprays that could be used in the mouth where one would deliver cannabis to the membranes in the mouth. It'd be absorbed and avoid the problems associated with smoking. That mode of delivery and that preparation has been approved for use in Canada, and there's some trials in Canada underway to test this this compound and this delivery system, Sativex.
Now, as you heard in the beginning, I hope the Iowa Board of Pharmacy and the Iowa Medical Society have both endorsed the reclassification of marijuana but stopped short of endorsing marijuana for medical use. Many say more research needs to be done or have expressed skepticism in studies that have been done. How are you conducting your studies to inspire confidence in the findings?
Well, we used really the most modern and rigorous approaches in clinical trials research. We have as clearly as it's possible to do, we have a, if you will, a homogeneous diagnosis in the studies. That is, the studies are primarily of one condition, painful neuropathy due to HIV. We randomize people. That is, each person has a chance of, like flipping a coin, of being assigned to the active or the experimental drug or a placebo. We use the modern assessment techniques for reporting pain intensity, and then have used the rigorous statistical analysis procedures. So I think the studies conform quite well to what one would expect from top-notch clinical trials. And this, I guess the second thing is that not all the studies were done in one city. San Diego is the headquarters for the CMCR, but our studies were conducted at the University of California, Davis, University of California, San Francisco. So that gives us some confidence that three different sites, three presumably different populations, all with roughly all the studies use roughly the same methodology. That it's just not the people in San Diego who have experienced pain relief, but there's some breadth to this.
Dr. Atkinson, we want to slip in a couple of callers who want to get their voice. Nancy is not there with us. Daniel from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Daniel. Welcome to The Exchange. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, go ahead. We have just a few minutes left with Dr. Atkinson. What would you like to chip in?
I would just like to call in and say that I am an individual who has carpal tunnel in both of my wrists, and that without using marijuana from time to time, my pain is exceedingly difficult. And also talk about how it's really not very addictive. It's very easy to drop if you need to. You know, most opiates that are given to me or been given to people that I've been around are highly addictive, and you know, can be abused very quickly. And I feel that marijuana is a drug that we can use that is not as addictive as most of these things that are prescribed from a drug company. And just wish that you know, Iowa would get the ball rolling a little bit faster than what they have.
Daniel, thank you very much. You raised a point there about because, of course, one of the chief concerns is the abuse of marijuana, and closely linked to that is the addictive nature of this drug. Dr. Atkinson, what can you say about the addictive nature of marijuana compared to other pain reducers?
There's a liability, of course, to many of the analgesics. The stronger analgesics, like opioids, have that risk of misuse, abuse, and addiction. the same can, of course, be said for cannabis. There has to be some assessment in all of medicine as to risks and benefits, and cannabis isn't immune from that.
Mm-hmm. How do you think the possible reclassification of marijuana in Iowa will, from a Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, will inspire people to take up research? Is this a key step?
It would certainly facilitate research because its present classification really does impede people's interest. There are a lot of administrative steps, all proper and necessary under the Schedule 1 system, but that delays progress.
Is this the biggest obstacle you see in terms of getting more people, more research centers involved in the work on cannabis, the reclassification, or are there other things?
Well, the rescheduling would help. The states or the National Institute of Health has to be interested also in financially supporting research, and then it's a political rather than necessarily a scientific the question. If there's more data, perhaps science can help inform policy. But much of there's a lot of work to be done on the science, and
We have just a couple minutes left. How is your state handling this issue? Would you say well, or perhaps some aspects that you don't care for, and perhaps some tips for Iowa if we go down this path?
I think the strongest thing that the state did was ask of the scientific question of does it work, and is there some evidence that it works, and they were willing to pay for it. So that's the that's the leadership that they've shown. Some of these preliminary results are in, I think there'll be some time to see how the legislature comes to grip with it and informs policy to take the next step.
Mm-hmm. So it really is a chicken and egg question. You can't do the research without the funding, and you can't get the funding without the research.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Well, it's been nice talking to you. Dr. Atkinson, joining us from San Diego, co-director of the Center for Medicinal Cannabis Research at the University of California in San Diego. Dr. Atkinson, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
And we'll continue our discussion in the second half hour as we look at medical marijuana, the current clinical trials we heard about just there, and also the question of whether Iowa should join 14 other states that allow marijuana use for medicinal purposes. We'll talk about that when we come back in just a few minutes. We'll be joined by Dr. William Langley. He's executive director of the Genesis Health Group. That's a group of 120 Quad Cities physicians. He's also chair of the Iowa Medical Society Committee, which approved the resolution to ease the state's marijuana laws so that researchers can study the drug's usefulness to patients. And we want to know your opinion, your thoughts. Do you think more study is needed in order for marijuana to be approved for medical use? What evidence do you want to see? What concerns do you have? What hopes do you have? Could this potentially affect you directly? 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100, or The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back in just a few minutes. And we continue with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. This noon hour, I'm Ben Kiefer. We're talking about research into the medical uses of marijuana this hour. This spring, the Iowa Board of Pharmacy unanimously voted to recommend that the legislature take marijuana off its Schedule 1 controlled substance list. And the board said reclassifying marijuana to a less restrictive status would encourage more research into its medical uses. We contacted the Board of Pharmacy and some of its members to ask them to appear on today's show. They declined, but we can get some perspective on how the board handled this issue from listening to a portion of the public hearing. This was held last October in Iowa City, and this is Lloyd Jessen, executive director of the Iowa Board of Pharmacy.
Iowa law imposes upon the board the duty to periodically recommend to the legislature changes in controlled substance schedules. The board views this statutory responsibility with great seriousness, both because of the specificity of Iowa Code Chapter 124 and because marijuana use and the use of drugs in general is a sensitive medical, social, and political issue. Any board recommendation for changes to the controlled substance schedules will be preceded by a thoughtful review and analysis of the most helpful and current scientific information available to the board. In making a recommendation to the legislature regarding marijuana, the board will consider the following 12 factors. Number one, marijuana's actual or relative potential for abuse. Number two, marijuana's pharmacological effect. Number three, current scientific knowledge regarding marijuana. Number four, the history and current pattern of abuse of marijuana. Number five, the scope, duration, and significance of abuse of marijuana. Number six, the risk to the public health from moving marijuana from Schedule 1 to a different controlled substance schedule. Number seven, the potential of marijuana to produce psychic or physiological dependence liability. Number eight, whether marijuana is an immediate precursor of a substance or some other controlled substance schedule. Number nine, whether marijuana's potential for abuse or lack thereof is not properly reflected in its inclusion in Schedule 1. Number 10, whether marijuana lacks a high potential for abuse. Number 11, whether marijuana has an accepted medical use and treatment in the United States. And finally, number 12, whether marijuana does not lack accepted safety for use and treatment under medical supervision. We are here today to receive comments concerning the medical use of marijuana. Please be aware that we are not here to receive comments regarding the legalization of marijuana for non-medicinal purposes.
My name is John Stamler. I am an ophthalmologist, an MD, and a PhD, and I do clinical research in ophthalmology. I know you're going to hear a lot about other uses for medical marijuana, but I just wanted to put in a few words about the potential uses of these substances for treatment of eye diseases, particularly glaucoma. Glaucoma remains a leading cause of blindness in the United States. There are millions of people affected with this disease who still go blind, even though we have numerous treatments. But none of them are perfect. There are still people who cannot tolerate the side effects or the drugs are not effective. Glaucoma is a disease caused mostly by high pressure in the eye. And we do know that THC and related compounds do lower pressure in the eye, and both with topical and systemic use. So these drugs have a lot of potential. However, they're not being researched very much, and that's primarily because people don't see that they'll ever be available for use. So without being licensable for use in patients, these potentially very useful drugs will never be investigated and never be studied, and we won't find out if they'll be useful or not. I know as a researcher myself, I don't want to spend a lot of time in my career researching something that will never have the potential of being used.
That was ophthalmologist John Stamler testifying at an Iowa Board of Pharmacy a public hearing in Iowa City last fall. Before that, we heard Executive Director Lloyd Jessen opening the hearing. And now we turn to Dr. William Langley. He's Executive Director of the Genesis Health Group in the Quad Cities, also chair of an Iowa Medical Society committee that recently approved a resolution in support of reclassifying marijuana to encourage more research into the medical uses. Dr. William Langley joins us by phone. Good afternoon to you, Dr. Langley.
Good afternoon.
Great to have you with us. Now, you believe reclassifying marijuana will encourage much more research in the state.
Well, that was the sentiment of a rather large group of delegates who addressed that very subject. And the original resolution, you may know, was to go all the way and endorse the use of marijuana as the plant for medical purposes. But we had many discussions on that point and came up with something that's perhaps more of a compromise, and that is to endorse the Board of Pharmacy's action recommendation
Mm-hmm. So your Genesis Health Group represents about 120 physicians in the Quad Cities area, I understand?
That's right.
Now, with this initial resolution on medical marijuana as it was first introduced, endorsing legalization for medical use, how many would you say were in favor of taking the larger route, more comprehensive route, legalization for medical use?
In fact, the number of docs that are in my group are one thing, but as you reported, the role I was playing was to, as a delegate for the whole state of Iowa, to more or less speak on behalf of the physician. So that would be several thousands of docs, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But the sentiment in the room was very small to go all the way and endorse so-called medical marijuana, but it was nearly unanimous to take a proactive step of reclassifying it so there could be additional research.
And that's really the crux of it, as the group saw it, the physicians in Iowa saw it, that marijuana is not being researched because researchers don't believe it will be used.
Well, yes. And in fact, most of the physicians were, I think, properly scientific in their attitude. They said, you know, I'm not against it in general, but I need to know more about it. Why would I recommend we start using a drug that hasn't been thoroughly tested like most of our other pharmaceuticals? So it was a matter of being open-minded to the idea that the research may lead to that, but short of having good, solid research, everybody said, let's facilitate that research.
Did you feel that the body was not closing the door to the legalization for wider medical use? They were just wanting more information?
Yes, I would say quite yes. The attitude would be, if there were sufficient scientific evidence that it was beneficial to patients, it probably would have won the day that afternoon. But lacking what most of us thought was really good scientific evidence, we said we can't endorse its medical use right now, but we do want to find out, so let's begin that process.
Many studies have been done on the medical use of cannabis. So what evidence are you and other physicians waiting to see to assure you to allay the concerns?
That's a good point. The way most physicians would grade the levels of research are, I think, probably just as stringent as we would be with a new heart drug that came out, for instance. So the research that's been done would not, at least in most of our opinion, rise to quite that level. So it's more the really rigorous double-blind study with very rigorous controls and good record keeping for a long enough period of time so that we could feel that scientifically it was established to be beneficial.
Okay, let's go to our callers if you want to join our conversation. What evidence would you like to see for the clinical use to reclassify marijuana as from its Schedule 1 classification right now? 1-866-780-9100. And let's go to our first caller in Marion. Nick is with us. Good afternoon, Nick. Nick, are you there?
Yes.
Yes, go ahead. We have a few minutes. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just wanted to say I use marijuana to deal with chronic back pain. I have arthritis in my lower back. I also have a CDL, which kind of is they don't mix too well. And really, I think spending more money on research is just a waste of taxpayer dollars, because plenty of research has been done. It's just a matter of compiling the information and making a decision.
Mm-hmm. So for you, there's no question it works, Nick.
Oh, yeah. And with arthritis pains, you know, that surgery isn't an option, and they can give me other medications, prescriptions that will apparently help me, but most of those drugs are so strong that I wouldn't be able to do my job anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I can smoke a little bit of pot before I go to bed, actually sleep the night through, and be okay the next day to do my day at work.
Dr. Langley, I wonder how often you get these reports from your patients. Other doctors get these reports. How much filters through about the currently illegal use of marijuana for medical use in Iowa? Is this a common story?
Oh, it's very common. And most of us physicians are certainly open-minded and wouldn't deny that individual users experience benefits, but it's, from a scientific standpoint, classified as anecdotal, which is sort of a put-down. It says, well, that works for that person, but if you have 1,000 people and you divide them into groups of 500, what what sort of results will you have? So mm-hmm. that's really what most of us were looking for.
But if people like Nick, stories are filtering through to the doctors of Iowa about its medicinal function here, isn't that worth something more than anecdotal?
In all honesty, no, because people will make similar statements about medications used for reasons that are not necessarily widely understood. And we hold the line. We say, well, we're glad this patient seems to benefit from this novel use of a drug, but before we turn the drug loose on lots of other people with potential risks, et cetera, we'd like to actually see it looked at.
Okay. Thank you very much, Nick, for calling in and sharing your experience. Let's go to Tony in Cedar Rapids. Tony, good afternoon.
Tony? Hello?
Yes, Tony, you're on the air. Welcome to our program.
Hi. How you doing, sir?
We're doing fine. What is your contact? Have you been using marijuana in a medicinal way?
Yes, sir. I'm actually a veteran of Iraq. We went through some roadside bombs, and I incurred some injuries. Have chronic back pain, just like your last caller, and so I've been using marijuana, and just like the last caller said, it's one of the few things that I can do that actually helps my back and lets me function still the next day. You know, just like you said, some of these medicines the doctors give us, they knock you out, pretty much make you a zombie. Marijuana, on the other hand, is not like that, at least not for me. Mm-hmm. And, and I also wanted to find out if there was any kind of research as far as mental, conditions like post-traumatic stress, because what I found out when I got back from Iraq, it was like I was really hyper-vigilant, and always on edge. And then once I kind of started smoking, I just, I can be calm and I can be like more relaxed. And I know that's kind of like a high, but I want to know if there's any kind of research and that aspect of it.
Tony, thank you very much for your story. Dr. Atkinson, that last point, indications that marijuana use helps with cases of mental trauma, in this case, PTSD?
Are you asking me?
Yes, Dr. Langley, excuse me. Dr. Atkinson was our first guest in the first half hour. Excuse me, sir.
He's probably running back to his phone right now. I would say that even the mental and behavioral aspects of marijuana are not as well understood as other drugs because it's hard to do the research. And as a researcher, you would have lots of extra hoops to jump through to be able to do any kind of research. So we know what he's describing is quite typical in somebody who's smoked marijuana. But again, even if you wanted to get some beneficial behavioral effects for PTSD, for instance, it would be nice to be able to have 100 people in each group and then stand there with a clipboard and make observations. And right now, that's kind of hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Tony, thank you for your call. Good luck relieving those symptoms. Tony from Cedar Rapids, thank you.
Hello?
Yes, Tony, thank you. And Dr. Langley, so what is your opinion about medical marijuana? Would you ever recommend it to a patient?
Sure, and that's what surprised me. Not only I would, but I would say most of the doctors in the room, we had close to 100 doctors. It was a very spirited discussion. The big change is that instead of everybody saying, no, this is bad stuff, don't use it, the doctors were very open-minded, and they said, as I did, let's see if we can't get some hard evidence that tells us how it works. But I would be quite comfortable if I once were able to see the studies arrayed before me. And I understand from your callers and maybe many of your listeners, that sounds like a smokescreen. Well, the doctor keeps saying he wants studies. There have been a whole bunch of studies done, and they'll never be happy. They'll never okay it. But that really wasn't the sense of the group when we voted a couple Saturdays ago.
Dr. Langley, please stay on the line. I want to welcome into our conversation State Senator Joe Bolcom of Iowa City. Senator Bolcom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Ben.
It's fair to characterize you as an advocate of legalizing marijuana for medical use?
I think that'd be a fair characterization.
So what is the legislature likely to do once presented with the endorsement for change from these two organizations?
Well, let me just say the Board of Pharmacy deserves a lot of credit for really a thorough job that they did evaluating the scientific literature and in the four public hearings they had to hear from health professionals and patients in Iowa throughout the state about their fact-gathering effort to make their decision to reclassify marijuana as a substance that has some medical value. I think that they did a good job, it seems to me, in looking at the scientific research. And it's clear that we need to do more research, but their judgment is there is some medical benefit here. The legislature, it would appear that the Legislative Council, which is going to be meeting in June, is likely going to recommend that the Board of Pharmacy establish a task force to make recommendations to the General Assembly on how Iowa might proceed in developing a medical marijuana program for patients in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. This change of the Schedule 1 to Schedule 2, though, how likely?
Unless we make the schedule change, there's no need to create a program allowing access. So I think if members of the General Assembly hear enough from patients around the state, like any issue before the General Assembly, we need to hear from constituents. If enough people are moved, there's going to be some hope to make the legislative change. It's likely going to be an issue that's going to probably take a little bit more education of policymakers and more Iowans speaking up about their interest in this topic.
What do you imagine a time frame being here for what you see as raising awareness about the medicinal purposes of marijuana and getting the politics in order to allow access to medical marijuana?
Well, it'd be my hope that we could convene a task force led by the Board of Pharmacy later this year that would have a variety of stakeholders, including health professionals, law enforcement, and, of course, patients, to make a set of policy recommendations that would come in the form of a piece of legislation next January. From there, again, it's hard to say how quickly something like this will move. Members are responsive to people they hear from in their communities back home, and it's going to take just some grassroots work in that way of people that think this is an important change to make in Iowa law to see things move forward. It could be a year or more of work ahead in that regard.
We've heard in the media the way marijuana use has exploded in states like California, other states as well. Has that hurt the cause here, do you think?
Well, I think that the California example is an awful example of how to proceed in this area. I think, in my mind, there have to be a set of important safeguards in place that make sure patients have access on a doctor's order to have marijuana and essentially nobody else. And so I think we're going to engage law enforcement in this conversation, health professionals, in patients in designing a program that has adequate safeguards in place. But the California example is probably not much help to any state that's discussing this issue at this point.
Dr. Langley, if you're still on the line there, do you agree with Senator Bolcom that the California example is a poor example for those who advocate marijuana for medical use?
It's a poor model to emulate, that's for sure. And I think, at least for physicians and the public, seeing news reports about how it's really been abused surely can't help the cause in Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Senator Bolcom, why is this something you feel so strongly about? Has this affected you or a loved one, or has a potential of helping you or a loved one in the future?
Well, it's been an issue I've been interested in for a number of years. I've introduced legislation over the last decade on a couple of occasions. I think this last a year ago, the latest round of bills being introduced, we actually had a subcommittee on the bill. We had about 35 people show up at the meeting in Des Moines, and I got probably 100 emails, probably 60 extremely detailed personal health stories from average Iowans, you know, moms, young people, older people, people suffering from chronic disease. And while I'd been kind of interested in the issue, I think hearing from people at that committee meeting and seeing the response online, you know, It occurred to me that a lot of people are currently illegally using this substance for some significant health benefit and quality of life benefit, that it seems worth exploring the possibilities for those Iowans that suffer in chronic pain.
Okay, we have to leave it there, but it seems clear that if you, as a listener, are concerned about this, have concerns, have hopes, questions, get in touch with your state representative or your state senator and voice those concerns. I want to thank State Senator Joe Bolcom for joining us. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Ben.
And Dr. William Langley, Executive Director of Genesis Health Group in the Quad Cities, Chair of the Iowa Medical Society Committee, which approved a resolution that encouraged more research for medicinal uses of marijuana. The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins, Jeff Schmidt, and Alex Hoyer. Our producer assistant today, Christoph Mai. Technical support from Dennis Reese. Podcasting and on-demand audio available at iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. And tomorrow on this program, we'll look at the baby boomer generation being faced with difficult decisions when it comes to caring for aging parents. Also part of the program tomorrow, world-renowned literary journalist Gail Sheehy discussing her new book on the topic, Passages in Caregiving. Tune in tomorrow. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News.